Instead, she found a mob waiting for her. Chapter 19. The van's parked in a semi-remote part of court, so seeing the area packed with eager Maroi was quite a shock to Lissa. Guardians moved through the people like ghosts, just as they had at the nomination session, keeping as much order as possible. The crowd kept getting in the way as the vans attempted to reach the garages, and faces looked in the windows, trying to get a glimpse of the royal candidates. Lissa stared at the masses in shock, almost afraid to get out. Ariana gave her a comforting smile. "This is normal. They all want to know who made it and who didn't. They especially want to know." She inclined her head toward the front of the van. Peering through the windshield, Lissa spied the other six candidates. Because the forest course could only accommodate so many people, the group had been split in half. The rest of the candidates would take the same test tomorrow, and were no doubt curious who among their competitors had passed today. Lissa was used to order and decorum around royals, so she was astonished to see such eagerness and frenzy among them now. And of course, the common Maroi, who'd been arriving at court, were mixed into the crowd too. Everyone was pushing, peering over the heads of others to find out what had happened. People were shouting some of the candidates' names, and I was half surprised they hadn't come up with songs and banners. Lissa and her companions exited the van and were met with a wave of cheers that rippled through the crowd. It became obvious pretty quickly who had passed and who hadn't. This sent the crowd abuzz even more. Lissa stood rooted to the spot, staring around and feeling lost. It was one thing to rationally discuss the pros of her running for queen with her friends. It was an entirely different matter to suddenly be thrust into what the elections truly meant. Her focus had been limited to a few things: my safety, finding the murderer, and surviving the tests. Now, as she took in the crowd, she realized the election was bigger than her, bigger than anything she could have imagined. For these people, it wasn't a joke. It wasn't a scam to twist the law and stall for time. Their lives were figuratively on the line. Maroi and Dampiers lived inside various countries and obeyed those laws, but they also obeyed this government, the one that operated out of the court. It reached around the world and affected every Dampier and Maroi who chose to stay in our society. We had some voting, yes, but the king or queen shaped our futures. The guardians in charge of the crowds finally gave the okay for family members to push through the masses and collect their nominees. Lissa had no one. Both Janine and Eddie, despite their earlier claims, were occasionally given temporary tasks that prevented them from being with Lissa 24/7, and she certainly had no family to come for her. Adrift, she felt dizzy in the chaos, still stunned by her moment of clarity. Conflicting emotions warred within her. Deceiving everyone made her feel unworthy, like she should resign her candidacy right now. At the same time, she suddenly wanted to be worthy of the elections. She wanted to hold her head high and walk into the tests proudly, even if she was taking them for ulterior motives. A strong hand at last caught hold of her arm. Christian.
"Come on, let's get out of here."
He pulled her away, shouldering through the onlookers.
"Hey,"
he called to a couple guardians on the crowd's periphery.
"A little help here for the princess?"
It was the first time I had ever seen him act like a royal, throwing around the authority of his bloodline. To me, he was snarky, cynical Christian. In Maroi society, at 18, he could now technically be addressed as Lord Ozera. I'd forgotten that. The two guardians hadn't. They rushed to Lissa's side, helping Christian part the crowd. The faces around her were a blur, the noise a dull roar. Yet every once in a while, something would come through to her. The chanting of her name, declarations about the return of the dragon, which was the symbol of the Dragomir family. "This is real," she kept thinking. "This is real." The guardians efficiently led her out of it all and back across the court's grounds to her building. They released her once they considered her safe, and she graciously thanked them for their help. When she and Christian were in her room, she sank onto the bed, stunned. "Oh my God," she said. "That was insane." Christian smiled.
"Which part? Your welcome home party or the test itself? You look like you just... well, I'm not really sure what you just did."
Lissa took a quick survey of herself. They'd given her dry towels on the ride home, but her clothing was still damp and was wrinkled as it dried. Her shoes and jeans had mud all over them, and she didn't even want to think about what her hair looked like.
"Yeah, we..."
The words stuck on her tongue, and not because she suddenly decided not to tell him.
"I can't say," she murmured. "It really worked. The spell won't let me."
"What spell?"
he asked. Lissa rolled up her sleeve and lifted the bandage to show him the tiny tattooed dot on her arm.
"It's a compulsion spell, so I won't talk about the test, like the alchemists have."
"Wow,"
he said, truly impressed.
"I never actually thought those worked."
"I guess so. It's really weird. I want to talk about it, but I just can't."
"It's okay,"
he said, brushing some of her damp hair aside.
"You passed. That's what matters. Just focus on that."
"The only thing I want to focus on right now is a shower, which is kind of ironic, considering how soaked I am."
She didn't move, though, and instead stared off at the far wall.
"Hey,"
said Christian gently.
"What's wrong? Did the crowd scare you?"
She turned back to him.
"No, that's the thing. I mean, they were intimidating, yeah. But I just realized... I don't know. I realized I'm part of a major process. One that's gone on since..."
"The beginning of time,"
teased Christian, quoting Nathan's nonsensical statement.
"Nearly,"
she answered with a small smile that soon faded.
"This goes beyond tradition, Christian. The elections are a core part of our society. Ingrained. We can talk about changing age laws or fighting or whatever, but this is ancient. And far-reaching. Those people out there, they're not all Americans. They've come from other countries. I forget sometimes that even though the court is here, it rules Maroi everywhere. What happens here affects the whole world."
"Where are you going with this?"
he asked. She was lost in her own thoughts and couldn't see Christian as objectively as I could. He knew Lissa. He understood her and loved her. The two of them had a synchronicity similar to what Dimitri and I shared. Sometimes, however, Lissa's thoughts spun in directions he couldn't guess. He'd never admit it, but I knew part of why he loved her was that, unlike me, who everyone knew was impetuous, Lissa always seemed the picture of calmness and rationality. Then, she'd do something totally unexpected. Those moments delighted him, but sometimes scared him because he never knew just how much her old spirit was playing in her actions. Now was one of those times. He knew the elections were stressing her, and like me, he knew that could bring out the worst.
"I'm going to take these tests seriously," she said. It's shameful not to. An insult to our society. My ultimate goal is to find out who framed Rose. But in the meantime, I'm going to go through the trials like someone who intends to be queen."
Christian hesitated before speaking, a rarity for him.
"Do you want to be queen?"
That snapped Lissa from her dreamy philosophizing about tradition and honor.
"No, of course not. I'm 18. I can't even drink yet."
"That's never stopped you from doing it,"
he pointed out, becoming more like his usual self.
"I'm serious. I want to go to college. I want Rose back. I don't want to rule the Maroi Nation."
A sly look lit Christian's blue eyes.
You know, Aunt Tasha makes jokes about how you'd actually be a better queen than the others. Except sometimes, I don't think she's joking.
Lyssa groaned and stretched back on the bed.
I love her, but we've got to keep her in check. If anyone could actually get that law changed, it would be her and her activist friends.
Well, don't worry. The thing about her activist friends is that they have so much to protest, they don't usually get behind one thing at the same time.
Christian stretched out beside her and pulled her close.
But for what it's worth, I think you'd be a great queen too, Princess Dragomir.
You're going to get dirty, she warned.
Already am. Oh, you mean from your clothes?
He wrapped his arms around her, heedless of her damp and muddy state.
I spent most of my childhood hiding in a dusty attic and own exactly one dress shirt. You really think I care about this t-shirt?
She laughed and then kissed him, letting her mind free itself of worry for a moment and just savor the feel of his lips. Considering they were on a bed, I wondered if it was time for me to go. After several seconds, she pulled back and sighed contentedly.
You know, sometimes I think I love you.
Sometimes?
He asked in mock outrage. She ruffled his hair.
All the time. But I've got to keep you on your toes.
Consider me kept.
He brought his lips toward hers again, but stopped when a knock sounded at the door. Lyssa pulled back from the near kiss, but neither of them broke from the embrace.
Don't answer, said Christian.
Lyssa frowned, peering toward the living room. She slipped out of his arms, stood up, and walked toward the door. When she was several feet from it, she nodded knowingly.
It's Adrian.
More reason not to answer, said Christian.
Lyssa ignored him and opened the door, and sure enough, my devil-may-care boyfriend stood there. From behind Lyssa, I heard Christian say,
Worst timing ever.
Adrian studied Lyssa and then looked at Christian sprawling on the bed on the far side of the suite.
Huh,
Adrian said, letting himself in.
So that's how you're going to fix the family problem. Little Dragomir's. Good idea.
Christian sat up and strolled toward them.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You're interrupting official council business.
Adrian was dressed casually for him. Jeans and a black t-shirt, though he made it look like designer clothing. Actually, it probably was. God, I missed him. I miss them all.
What's going on?
Asked Lyssa. While Christian seemed to consider Adrian's arrival a personal offense, Lyssa knew that Adrian wouldn't be here without a good reason, especially this early in the Moroi day. Although he had on his normal lazy smile, there was an excited and eager glitter in his aura. He had news.
I've got him, said Adrian. Got him trapped.
Who?
Asked Lyssa, startled.
That idiot, Blake Lazar. What do you mean, trapped?
Asked Christian, as perplexed as Lyssa.
Did you set out a bear trap on the tennis courts or something? I wish. He's over at the Burning Arrow. I just bought another round, so he should still be there if we hurry. He thinks I went out for a cigarette.
Judging from the scent wreathing Adrian, Lyssa had a feeling he actually had been out for a cigarette, and likely shared in the round.
You've been at a bar this early?
Adrian shrugged.
It's not early for humans.
But you're not...
Come on, cousin.
Adrian's aura didn't have the muted colors of someone who was completely drunk, but yes, he definitely had a few drinks.
If pretty boy Ambrose was right about Aunt Tatiana, then this guy can tell us the names of other jealous women. Why didn't you just ask him yourself?
Asked Christian.
Because me asking about my aunt's sex life would be sick and wrong,
said Adrian.
Whereas Blake will be more than happy to talk to our charming princess here.
Alyssa really wanted her bed, but finding out anything to help me sparked a new rush of energy within her.
Okay, let me at least get some different clothes and brush my hair.
While she was changing in the bathroom, she heard Adrian say to Christian,
You know, your shirt's kind of grungy looking. Seems like you could put in a little more effort since you're dating a princess.
15 minutes or so later, the threesome were on their way across court to a tucked-away bar inside an administrative building. I'd been there before and had originally thought it was a weird place to house a bar. But, after a recent stint of filing, I decided that if I were doing office work for a living, I'd probably want a quick source of alcohol on hand, too. The bar was dimly lit, both for mood and Maroy comfort. Adrian's joking aside, it really was early for Maroy, and only a couple patrons were there. Adrian made a small gesture to the bartender, which I presumed was some kind of ordering signal because the woman immediately turned and began pouring a drink.
Hey, Vashkov, where'd you go?
A voice called over to Lissa and the others, and after a few moments, she spotted a lone guy sitting at a corner table. As Adrian led them closer, Lissa saw that the guy was young, about Adrian's age, with curly black hair and brilliant teal eyes, kind of like Abe's recent tie. It was as though someone had taken the stunning color of both Adrian and Christian's eyes and mixed them together. He had a leanly muscled body, about as buff as any Maroy could manage, and even with a boyfriend, Lissa could admire how hot he was.
To get better looking company,
replied Adrian, pulling out a chair. The Maroy then noticed Adrian's companions and jumped up. He caught hold of Lissa's hand, leaned over, and kissed it.
Princess Dragomir, it's an honor to meet you at last. Seeing you from a distance was beautiful. Up close, divine. This, said Adrian grandly, is Blake Lazar.
It's nice to meet you, she said.
Blake smiled radiantly.
May I call you Vasilisa?
You can call me Lissa.
You can also,
added Christian.
Let go of her hand now.
Blake looked over at Christian, taking a few more moments to release Lissa's hand, seeming very proud about those extra seconds.
I've seen you too. Ozera. Crispin, right?
Christian, corrected Lissa.
Right.
Blake pulled out a chair, still playing the over-the-top gentleman.
Please, join us.
He made no such offer to Christian, who went out of his way to sit close to Lissa.
What would you like to drink? It's on me.
Nothing, said Lissa.
The bartender appeared just then, bringing Adrian's drink and another for Blake.
Never too early. Ask Ivashkov. You drink as soon as you roll out of bed, right? There's a bottle of scotch right on my nightstand,
said Adrian, still keeping his tone light. Lissa opened her eyes to his aura. It bore the bright gold all spirit users had, still muddled slightly from alcohol. It also had the faintest tinge of red. Not true anger, but definite annoyance. Lissa recalled that neither Adrian nor Ambrose had had a good opinion of this Blake guy.
So, what brings you and Christopher here?
Asked Blake. He finished a glass of something amber-colored and set it down beside the new drink.
Christian,
said Christian.
We were talking about my aunt earlier, said Adrian.
Again, he managed to sound very conversational, but no matter how much he might want to clear my name, delving into the details of Tatiana's murder obviously bothered him. Blake's smile diminished a little.
How depressing for both of you.
That was directed to Adrian and Lissa. Christian might as well have not existed.
Sorry about Hathaway, too,
he added to Lissa alone.
I've heard how upset you've been. Who'd have seen that coming?
Lissa realized he was referring to how she'd been pretending to be angry and hurt by me.
Well, she said bitterly, I guess you just don't know people. There were a million clues beforehand. I just didn't pay attention.
You must be upset too, said Christian. We heard you and the Queen were kind of close.
Blake's grin returned.
Yeah, we knew each other pretty well. I'm gonna miss her. She might have seemed cold to some people, but believe me, she knew how to have a good time.
Blake glanced at Adrian.
You must have known that. Not in the way you did.
Adrian paused to take a sip of his own drink. I think he needed it to restrain any snippy remarks. And honestly, I didn't begrudge him it. I actually admired his self-control. If I'd been in his place, I would have long since punched Blake.
Or Ambrose.
Blake's pretty smile transformed into a full-fledged scowl.
Him? That blood whore? He didn't deserve to be in her presence. I can't even believe they let him stay at court.
He actually thinks you killed the Queen.
Lyssa then added hastily.
Which is ridiculous when all the evidence proves Rose did it.
Those hadn't been Ambrose's exact words, but she wanted to see if she could elicit a reaction. She did.
He thinks what?
Yes, definitely no smile now. Without it, Blake suddenly didn't seem as good-looking as earlier.
That lying bastard! I have an alibi and he knows it! He's just pissed off because she liked me better. Then why did she keep him around?
Asked Christian, face almost angelic.
Weren't you enough?
Blake fixed him with a glare while finishing the new drink in nearly one gulp. Almost by magic, the bartender appeared with another. Blake nodded his thanks before continuing.
Oh, I was more than enough. More than enough for a dozen women. But I didn't fool around on the side like he did.
Adrian's expression was growing increasingly pained at each mention of Tatiana's sex life. Still, he played his role.
I suppose you're talking about Ambrose's other girlfriends? Yup, but girl is kind of extreme. They were all older, and honestly, I think they paid him. Not that your mom needed to pay anyone,
added Blake.
I mean, she's actually pretty hot. But you know, she couldn't really be with him in any real way.
It seemed to take all of them a moment to follow what Blake was alluding to. Adrian caught on first.
What did you just say? Oh.
Blake looked legitimately surprised, but it was hard to say if it was an act.
I thought you knew. Your mom and Ambrose. Well, who could blame her? With your dad, though, just between you and me, I think she could have done better.
Blake's tone implied exactly whom he thought Daniela could have done better with. In Lyssa's vision, Adrian's aura flared red.
You son of a bitch!
Adrian was not the fighting type, but there was a first time for everything, and Blake had just crossed a serious line.
My mom was not cheating on my dad, and even if she was, she sure as hell wouldn't have to pay for it.
Blake didn't seem fazed, but maybe things would have been different if Adrian actually had hit him. Lyssa rested her hand on Adrian's arm and squeezed it gently.
Easy,
she murmured. I felt the smallest tingle of calming compulsion move from her into him. Adrian recognized it immediately and pulled his arm back, giving her a look that said he didn't appreciate her help.
I thought you didn't like your dad,
said Blake, utterly clueless that his news might be upsetting.
And besides, don't get all pissy at me. I wasn't sleeping with her. I'm just telling you what I heard. Like I said, if you want to start accusing random people, go after someone like Ambrose.
Lyssa jumped in to keep Adrian from saying anything.
How many women? Do you know who else he was involved with?
Three others.
Blake ticked off names on his hand.
Marta Drozdov and Mirabel Kanta. Wait, that's two. I was thinking with Daniela, that's three. But then that's four with the Queen. Yeah, four.
Lissa didn't concern herself with Blake's faulty math skills, though it did support Adrian's previous idiot claims. Marta Drozdov was a semi-notorious royal who had taken to traveling the world in her old age. By Lissa's estimation, Marta was hardly in the U.S. most of the year, let alone court. She didn't seem invested enough to murder Tatiana. As for Mirabel Kanta, she was notorious in a different way. She was known for sleeping with half the guys at court, married or otherwise. Lissa didn't know her well, but Mirabel had never seemed overly interested in any one guy.
Sleeping with other women wouldn't really give him a motive for killing the queen, pointed out Lissa.
No, agreed Blake. Like I said, it's obvious that Hathaway girl did it.
He paused.
Damn shame, too. She's pretty hot. God, that body. Anyway, if Ambrose had killed her, he'd have done it because he was jealous of me. Because Tatiana liked me better. Not because of all those other women he was doing. Why wouldn't Ambrose just kill you?
Asked Christian.
Makes more sense.
Blake didn't have a chance to respond because Adrian was still back on the earlier topic, his eyes flashing with anger.
My mother wasn't sleeping with anybody. She doesn't even sleep with my father.
Blake continued in his oblivious way.
Hey, I saw them. They were all over each other. Did I mention how hot you're...
Stop it, warned Lissa. It's not helping.
Adrian clenched his glass.
None of this is helping.
Clearly, things weren't going the way he'd hoped when he'd first summoned Lissa and Christian from her room.
And I'm not going to sit and listen to this bullshit.
Adrian downed the drink and shot up from his chair, turning abruptly for the exit. He tossed some cash on the bar before walking out the door.
Poor guy, said Blake.
He was back to his calm, arrogant self.
He's been through a lot between his aunt, mom, and murdering girlfriend. That's why, really, at the end of the day, you just can't trust women.
He winked at Lissa.
Present company excluded, of course.
Lissa felt as disgusted as Adrian, and a quick glance at Christian's stormy face showed he felt the same. It was time to go before someone really did punch Blake.
Well, it's been great talking to you, but we need to go.
Blake gave her puppy dog eyes.
But you just got here. I was hoping we could get to know each other.
It went without saying what he meant by that.
Oh, and Kreskin too.
Christian didn't even bother with a correction this time. He simply took hold of Lissa's hand.
We have to go.
Yeah,
agreed Lissa. Blake shrugged and waved for another drink.
Well, anytime you want to really experience the world, come find me.
Christian and Lissa headed for the door, with Christian muttering,
I really hope that last part was meant for you, not me.
That's no world I want to experience, said Lissa with a grimace.
They stepped outside and she glanced around, in case Adrian had lingered. Nope. He was gone, and she didn't blame him.
I can see now why Ambrose and Adrian don't like him. He's such a...
Asshole,
supplied Christian. They turned toward her building.
I suppose so.
Enough to commit murder?
Honestly, no.
Lissa sighed.
I kind of agree with Ambrose. I don't think Blake's smart enough for murder. Or that the motive's really there. I can't tell if people are lying or not from their auras, but his didn't reveal anything overly dishonest. You joked, but if anyone was going to commit a jealous murder, why wouldn't the guys want to kill each other? A lot easier.
They did both have easy access to Tatiana,
Christian reminded her.
I know, but if there is love and sex involved here... It seems like it'd be someone jealous of the queen. a woman. A long, meaningful pause hung between them, neither of them wanting to say what they were both likely thinking. Finally, Christian broke the silence.
Say, like, Daniela Ivashkov?
Lissa shook her head.
I can't believe that. She doesn't seem like the type.
Murderers never seem like the type. That's why they get away with it.
Have you been studying up on your criminology or something?
No.
They reached her building's front door and he opened it for Lissa.
Just laying out some facts. We know Adrian's mom never liked Tatiana for personality reasons. Now we find out that they were sharing the same guy.
She has an alibi, said Lissa stonily.
Everyone has an alibi,
he reminded her.
And as we've learned, those can be paid for. In fact, Daniela's already paid for one.
I still can't believe it. Not without more proof. Ambrose swore this was more political than personal.
Ambrose isn't off the list either.
They came to Lissa's room.
This is harder than I thought it would be.
They went inside and Christian wrapped his arms around her.
I know, but we'll do it together. We'll figure it out. But we might want to keep some of this to ourselves. Maybe I'm overreacting here, but I think it'd be best if we don't ever, ever tell Adrian his mom has an excellent motive for having killed his aunt.
Oh, you think?
She rested her head against his chest and yawned.
Nap time, said Christian, leading her toward the bed.
I still need a shower.
Sleep first, shower later.
He pulled back the covers.
I'll sleep with you.
Sleep or sleep?
She asked dryly, sliding gratefully into bed.
Real sleep. You need it.
He crawled in beside her, spooning against her and resting his face on her shoulder.
Of course, afterward, if you want to conduct any official council business.
I swear, if you say little Dragomirs, you can sleep in the hall.
I'm sure there was a patented Christian retort coming, but another knock cut him off. He looked up in exasperation.
Don't answer it. For real this time.
But Lissa couldn't help herself. She broke from his embrace and climbed out of bed.
It's not Adrian.
Then it's probably not important, said Christian.
We don't know that.
She got up and opened the door, revealing my mother. Janine Hathaway swept into the room as casually as Adrian had, her eyes sharp as she studied every detail around her for a threat.
Sorry I was away, she told Lissa. Eddie and I wanted to set up an alternating system, but we both got pulled for duty earlier.
She glanced over at the rumpled bed, with Christian in it, but being who she was, she came to a pragmatic conclusion, not a romantic one.
Just in time. I figured you'd want to sleep after the test. Don't worry. I'll keep watch and make sure nothing happens.
Christian and Lissa exchanged rueful looks.
Thanks,
said Lissa.
Chapter 20. You should sleep.
Sydney's soft voice nearly made me leap out of my skin, proving that even while in Lissa's mind, I could still stay alert. I tuned back to Sonia's dark living room. Aside from Sydney, everything was quiet and at peace.
You look like the walking dead, she continued. And I don't say that lightly.
I've got to stay on watch, I said.
I'll watch. You sleep.
You're not trained like me, I pointed out. You might miss something.
Even I wouldn't miss Strigoi beating down the door, she replied. Look, I know you guys are tough. You don't have to convince me, but I have a feeling things are going to get harder, and I don't want you passing out at some crucial moment. If you sleep now, you can relieve Dimitri later.
Only the mention of Dimitri made me give in. We would need to relieve each other eventually. So, reluctantly, I crawled into Sydney's bed on the floor, giving her all sorts of instructions that I think she rolled her eyes at. I fell asleep almost instantly, and then woke up just as quickly when I heard the sound of a door closing. I immediately sat upright, expecting to see Strigoi busting down the door. Instead, I found sunlight creeping in through the windows and Sydney watching me with amusement. In the living room, Robert was sitting up on the couch, rubbing his eyes. Victor was gone. I turned to Sydney in alarm.
"He's in the bathroom,"
she said, anticipating my question. That was the sound I'd heard. I exhaled in relief and stood up, surprised at how even a few hours of sleep had energized me. If I only had food, I'd be ready for anything. Sonia didn't have any, of course, but I settled for a glass of water in the kitchen. As I stood there drinking, I noticed that the Dashkov brothers had made themselves at home, coats hanging on hooks, car keys on the counter. I quietly grabbed hold of the keys and called for Sydney. She came in and I slipped her the keys, trying not to let them rattle. "Do you still know about cars?" I murmured. In one exquisite look, she told me that was a ridiculous and insulting question. "Okay, can you do a grocery run? We're going to need food. And maybe on your way out, you can, make sure their car has engine trouble or something? Anything that keeps it here, but not something obvious like slashed tires." She put the keys in her pocket.
"Easy. Got any food requests?"
I thought about it. Something with sugar and coffee for Dimitri.
"Coffee's a given," she said.
Victor stepped into the kitchen, his typically unconcerned expression making me think he hadn't heard me instructing Sydney to sabotage his car. "Sydney's getting groceries," I said, hoping to distract him before he might notice the missing keys. "Need anything?"
"A feeder would be nice, but barring that, Robert has an especial liking for Cheerios. The apple cinnamon kind."
He smiled at Sydney.
"I never thought I'd see the day an alchemist would be an errand girl. It's charming."
Sydney opened her mouth, no doubt to make some biting comment, and I quickly shook my head. "Just go," I said. She went, and Victor soon returned to Robert's side. Convinced the brothers wouldn't be going anywhere in full daylight without a car, I decided it was time to check on Dimitri. To my surprise, Sonia was awake. She sat cross-legged on the bed with him, and the two spoke in hushed tones. Her hair was disheveled from both sleep and fighting, but otherwise she showed no cuts or bruises from the battle. Dimitri had been the same after his transformation, escaping terrible burns. The power of a Strigoi restoration healed all injuries. Between my skinned legs and pseudo-concussion, I kind of wished someone had transformed me from a Strigoi. Sonia turned from Dimitri as I entered. A sequence of emotions passed across her face. Fear, astonishment, recognition.
"Rose?"
There was hesitancy in the word, like she wondered if I was a hallucination. I forced a smile.
"It's good to see you again."
I chose not to add, "Now that you're not trying to suck the life out of me." She averted her eyes down to her hands, studying her fingers like they were magical and wonderful. Of course, after being a monster, maybe having her old hands back really was wondrous. The day after his change, Dimitri hadn't seemed quite so fragile, but he'd certainly been in shock. That was also when he'd grown depressed. Was she? Or did she want to turn again, as Victor had suggested? I didn't know what to say. It was all so strange and awkward. "Sydney went for groceries," I told Dimitri lamely. "She also stayed up so that I could sleep last night."
"I know," he said with a small smile. "I got up once to check on you."
I felt myself flushing, somehow embarrassed that I'd been caught in weakness.
"You can rest too," I told him. Get some breakfast, and then I'll keep an eye on everything. I have it on good authority that Victor is going to have car trouble. Also, that Robert really likes Cheerios. So if you want some, you're out of luck. He doesn't seem like the sharing type. Dimitri's smile grew. Sonia suddenly lifted her head.
There's another spirit user here,
she said, voice frantic.
I can feel it. I remember him.
She looked between Dimitri and me.
It's not safe. We're not safe. You shouldn't have us around.
Everything's fine, said Dimitri,
voice so, so gentle. That tone was rare for him, but I'd heard it before. He'd used it on me in some of my most desperate moments.
Don't worry.
Sonia shook her head.
No, you don't understand. We're capable of terrible things. To ourselves, to others. It's why I changed. To stop the madness, and it did, except it was worse. In its way. The things I did.
There it was. The same remorse Dimitri had felt. Half afraid he'd start telling her there was no redemption for her either, I said. It wasn't you. You were controlled by something else. She buried her face in her hands.
But I chose it. Me, I made it happen.
That was spirit, I said. It's hard to fight. Like you said, it can make you do terrible things. You weren't thinking clearly. Lissa battles with the same thing all the time.
Vasilisa?
Sonia lifted her eyes and stared off into space. I think she was digging through memories. In fact, despite her ramblings now, I didn't believe she was quite as unstable as she'd been just before becoming Strigoi. We'd heard healings could lessen spirit's madness, and I think Robert's transformation had lightened some of the darkness within her for now.
Yes, of course. Vasilisa has it too.
She turned to me in a panic.
Did you help her? Did you get her out of there?
I did, I said, trying to emulate Dimitri's gentleness. Lissa and I fled St. Vladimir's for a while, partly because of warnings from Sonia. We left and then came back and, were able to stop what was hunting her. I didn't think it was a good idea for Sonia to know that the thing, or rather person, hunting Lissa was now sitting out in the living room. I took a step forward.
And you can help Lissa too.
We need to know if...
No,
said Dimitri, no gentleness now in the warning look he gave me.
Not yet.
But...
Not yet.
I shot him a glare in return but said no more. I was all for giving Sonia her recuperation time, but we didn't have forever. The clock was ticking, and we had to find out what Sonia knew. I felt like Dimitri would have been able to give us this information immediately after he'd been changed back. Of course, he hadn't been unstable beforehand, so he'd kind of had an edge. Still, we couldn't play house in Kentucky forever.
"Can I see my flowers?"
asked Sonia.
Can I go outside and see my flowers?
Dimitri and I exchanged glances.
Of course, he said.
We all moved toward the door, and that's when I had to ask.
Why did you grow flowers when you were... like you were?
She paused.
I've always grown flowers.
I know, I remember. They were gorgeous. The ones here are gorgeous, too. Is that why? I mean, did you just want a pretty garden, even as a Strigoi? The question was unexpected and seemed to throw her off. I was about to give up on an answer when she finally said,
No, I never thought about pretty. They were, I don't know, something to do. I'd always grown flowers. I had to see if I still could. It was like a test of my skills, I guess.
I met Dimitri's eyes again. So, beauty hadn't been part of her world. It was just like I'd told him. Strigoi were notoriously arrogant,
and it seemed the flowers had simply been a show of prowess. Growing them had also been a familiar habit for her, and I recalled how Dmitri had read Western novels while Strigoi. Being Strigoi might cost someone their sense of goodness and morality, but old behaviors and hobbies remained. We took her out to the living room, interrupting a conversation between Victor and Robert. Sonia and Robert both froze, sizing each other up. Victor gave us one of his knowing smiles.
Up and around. Have we found out what we need yet?
Dmitri shot him a look similar to what I'd received when asking about interrogation.
Not yet.
Sonia dragged her gaze from Robert and moved quickly toward the patio door, pausing when she saw our shoddy patch job.
You broke my door, she said.
Collateral damage, I said. In my periphery, I think Dmitri rolled his eyes. Needing no guidance from us, Sonia opened the door and stepped outside. With a gasp, she came to a halt and stared upward. The sky was a perfect cloudless blue, and the sun had crossed the horizon now, illuminating everything in gold. I went outside, too, feeling the warmth of that light on my skin. Some of the night's coldness lingered, but we were in store for a hot day. Everyone else came out, too, but Sonia was oblivious. She lifted her hands upward as though maybe she could grab hold of the sun and wrap it in her arms.
It's so beautiful.
She finally looked away and met my eyes.
Isn't it? Have you ever seen anything so beautiful?
Beautiful, I reiterated. For some reason, I felt both happy and sad. She walked around her yard, examining every plant and flower. She touched the petals and inhaled their fragrance.
So different,
she kept saying to herself.
So different in the sun.
Several especially caught her attention.
These don't open at night. Do you see it? Do you see the colors? Can you smell that?
The questions didn't seem to be for anyone in particular. We watched, all of us kind of hypnotized. At last, she settled into the patio chair, happily gazing around, lost in sensory overload, in that beauty that had been denied to her as a Strigoi. When it became obvious she wasn't leaving for a while, I turned to Dmitri and repeated Sydney's advice about him taking a turn at sleeping while we waited for Sonia to recover. To my surprise, he actually agreed.
That's smart. Once Sonia's able to talk, we'll need to move.
He smiled.
Sydney's turning into a battle mastermind.
Hey, she's not in charge here, I teased. She's just a soldier.
Right.
He lightly brushed his fingers against my cheek.
Sorry, Captain.
General, I corrected, catching my breath at that brief touch. He gave Sonia a kind goodbye before disappearing into the house. She nodded, but I don't know if she really heard. Victor and Robert brought out two wooden kitchen chairs and set them in the shade. I chose a spot on the ground. Nobody spoke. It wasn't the weirdest thing I'd ever experienced, but it was certainly strange. Sydney returned later with the groceries, and I briefly abandoned the group to check in with her. Victor's keys were lying back on the counter, which I took as a good sign. Sydney unloaded an assortment of food and handed me a box of a dozen donuts.
Hope that's enough for you,
she remarked. I made a face at her presumption but took the donuts anyway.
Come on outside when you're done, I told her. It's like the barbecue of the damned, except there's no grill.
She looked puzzled, but when she joined us later, she seemed to get what I'd been saying. Robert brought out a bowl of Cheerios, but neither Sydney nor Victor ate. I gave Sonia a donut, the first thing that took her attention from her yard.
She held it in her hands, turning it over and over.
I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can eat it.
Of course you can. I recalled how Dimitri had regarded food uncertainly, too.
It's chocolate glazed. Good stuff.
She took a tentative rabbit-sized bite. She chewed it a billion times and finally swallowed. She closed her eyes briefly and sighed.
Such sweetness.
Slowly, she continued taking more tiny bites. It took forever for her to get halfway through the donut, and at that point, she finally stopped. I'd polished off 3 donuts by then, and my impatience to accomplish something was growing. Part of it was still the irritability from Spirit, and part of it was just my continual restlessness to help Lissa.
Sonia, I said pleasantly,
fully aware of how pissed off Dimitri was going to be at me defying his instructions.
We wanted to talk to you about something.
Mm-hmm, she said, gazing at bees hovering around some honeysuckle.
Is there a relative of yours? Someone who, had a baby a while ago?
Sure,
she said. One of the bees flew from the honeysuckle to a rose, and she never looked away.
Lots.
Articulate, Rosemary, remarked Victor. Very articulate.
I bit my lip, knowing an outburst would upset Sonia, and probably Robert, too.
This would be a secret baby, I told her. And you were the beneficiary on a bank account that took care of the baby. An account paid for by Eric Dragomir.
Sonia's head whipped toward me, and there was no dreamy absent-mindedness in her blue eyes now. A few seconds passed before she spoke. Her voice was cold and hard. Not a Strigoi voice, but definitely a back-off voice.
No, I don't know anything about that.
She's lying, said Robert.
I didn't need any powers to figure that out, scoffed Sydney.
I ignored both of them.
Sonia, we know you know, and it's really important we find this baby, child, person.
We'd made guesses on the age, but weren't 100% sure. You said you were worried about Lissa earlier. This will help her. She needs to know. She needs to know she has another family member. Sonia turned her attention back to the bees, but I knew she was no longer watching them.
I don't know anything.
There was a trembling in her voice, and something told me that maybe I shouldn't push this after all. I couldn't tell if she was afraid or on the verge of rage.
Then why were you on the account?
This came from Victor.
I don't know anything,
she repeated. Her voice could have made icicles form on the ornamental trees.
Nothing!
Stop lying, snapped Victor. You know something, and you're going to tell us.
Hey, I exclaimed. Be quiet. You don't have interrogation rights here.
You didn't seem to be doing a very good job.
Just shut up, okay? I looked back at Sonia, replacing my glare with a smile.
Please,
I begged.
Lissa's in trouble. This will help her. I thought you said before that you wanted to help her.
I promised,
said Sonia. Her voice was so low I could barely hear it.
Promised what?
I asked. Patience. Patience. I had to remain calm. I couldn't risk a breakdown. She squeezed her eyes shut and raked her hands through her hair violently, almost like a child about to have a tantrum.
Promised not to tell. Promised not to tell anyone.
I had the urge to run over and shake her. Patience. Patience, I repeated to myself. Don't upset her.
We wouldn't ask you to break your promise if it wasn't important. Maybe you can get in touch with this person.
Who had she promised?
Eric's mistress? And see if it's okay to tell us.
Oh, for God's sake, said Victor irritably. This is ridiculous and getting us nowhere.
He glanced at his brother.
Robert?
Robert hadn't done much so far today, but at Victor's command, Robert leaned forward.
Sonia?
Still obviously distraught, she turned to look at him, and her face went still.
Tell us what we need to know, said Robert.
His voice wasn't kind so much as smooth and lulling, with a faintly sinister touch.
Tell us who and where this child is. Tell us who the mother is.
This time I did jump to my feet. Robert was using compulsion on her to get the answers. Sonia's eyes stayed locked on him, but her body began to shake. Her lips parted, though no sound came out. A tangle of thoughts swirled in my mind. Compulsion would get us what we needed to know, but something told me it wasn't right. Sonia stopped me from any more pondering. She shot up almost as quickly as I had. She was still staring at Robert, but no longer in that transfixed, hypnotized way. She'd broken the compulsion, and now she was pissed. The features that had been scared and fragile earlier were filled with fury. I had no magical senses, but after being with Lissa, I knew raging spirit when I saw it. Sonia was a bomb about to explode.
How dare you, she hissed. How dare you try to compel me?
Plants and vines near Robert suddenly sprang to life, growing to impossible heights. They reached out, tangled themselves around his chair's legs, and pulled. The chair toppled over, Robert along with it. Victor moved to help his brother, but Robert was already taking matters into his own hands. Recovering remarkably fast, he narrowed his eyes at Sonia, and she went flying backward, slamming against the wooden fence. Air users could do that trick sometimes, but this wasn't air blowing her back. This was Spirit's telekinetic abilities. He apparently possessed them outside of dreams, too. Lovely. I'd seen Spirit users battle it out before, when Avery Lazar and Lissa had gone one-on-one. That hadn't been pretty, particularly since more than this exterior psychic phenomena had occurred. Avery had actually dug into Lissa's mind. And mine. I didn't know Robert or Sonia's full skill set, but this couldn't end well.
Dimitri!
I yelled, springing towards Sonia. I didn't exactly know what I was going to do, but tackling her seemed like a sound plan. From what I'd observed, a lot of spirit involved eye contact with the target. And sure enough, when I managed to wrestle her to the ground, she struggled half-heartedly but mostly fought to keep her gaze on Robert. He screamed in sudden alarm, looking down at his own body in terror. Sonia was planting visions into his head. His expression hardened. He had to know it was an illusion, and a few moments later, he looked up, having broken her spell like she'd broken his earlier compulsion. Dimitri came tearing out the door at that point, just as Robert used his mind to fling one of the chairs towards Sonia. Of course, I was on top of her, so the chair hit me in the back. Dimitri picked up pretty quickly what was going on and ran toward Robert, attempting the same tactic as me. Victor, possibly thinking his brother was in physical danger, tried to pry Dimitri away, which was futile. More vines began to reach toward Robert, and I realized constraining Sonia wasn't all that useful.
Get him inside! I yelled to Dimitri. Get him away from her!
Dimitri had already guessed that and began dragging Robert toward the door. Even with Victor interfering, Dimitri's strength was enough to get Robert out of there and back into the house. As soon as her target was gone, all the energy seemed to fade out of Sonia. She made no more efforts to fight me and collapsed to the ground. I was relieved, having feared she'd turn on me once Robert was gone. Tentatively, still on guard, I helped Sonia sit up. She leaned against me, weak as a rag doll, and cried into my shoulder. Another breakdown. After that, it was a matter of damage control. In order to keep the spirit users apart, Dimitri had taken Robert to the bedroom and left Victor with him.
Robert seemed as worn out as Sonia, and Dmitri deemed the brothers safe enough to leave alone. Sonia collapsed on the couch, and after both Dmitri and I had tried to calm her down, we stepped away while Sydney held the Maroi woman's hand. I briefly recapped what had happened. Dmitri's face grew more and more incredulous as I did.
"I told you it wasn't time," he exclaimed. "What were you thinking? She's too weak."
"You call that weak? And hey, I was doing fine. It wasn't until Victor and Robert got involved that things went to hell." Dmitri took a step toward me, anger radiating off him.
"They should never have gotten involved. This is you, acting irrational again, jumping in foolishly with no thought of the consequences."
Outrage shot through me in return. "Hey, I was trying to make progress here. If being rational is sitting around and doing therapy, then I'm happy to jump over the edge. I'm not afraid to get in the game."
"You have no idea what you're saying,"
he growled. We were standing closer now, hardly any space left between us as we engaged in our battle of wills.
"This may have set us back."
"This set us forward. We found out she knows about Eric Dragomir. The problem is she promised not to tell anyone about this baby."
"Yes, I promised,"
piped up Sonia. Dmitri and I turned as one, realizing our argument was fully visible and audible to Sonia and Sydney.
"I promised."
Her voice was very small and weak, pleading with us. Sydney squeezed her hand.
"We know. It's okay. It's okay to keep promises. I understand."
Sonia looked at her gratefully.
"Thank you. Thank you."
"But," said Sydney carefully, "I heard that you care about Lyssa Dragomir."
"I can't,"
interrupted Sonia, turning fearful again.
I know, but what if there was a way to help her without breaking your promise?"
Sonia stared at Sydney. Dmitri glanced at me questioningly. I shrugged and then stared at Sydney too. If someone had asked who could stage the best intervention with a crazy woman who'd formerly been an undead monster, Sydney Sage would have been my last guess. Sonia frowned, all attention on Sydney.
What do you mean?
"Well, what did you promise exactly? Not to tell anyone that Eric Dragomir had a mistress and baby?"
Sonia nodded.
"And not to tell who they were?"
Sonia nodded again. Sydney gave Sonia the warmest, friendliest smile I'd ever seen on The Alchemist.
"Did you promise not to tell anyone where they are?"
Sonia nodded, and Sydney's smile faltered a little. Then her eyes lit up.
"Did you promise not to lead anyone to where they are?"
Sonia hesitated, no doubt turning every word over in her mind. Slowly, she shook her head.
"No."
"So, you could lead us to them, but not tell us where they actually are. You wouldn't be breaking the promise that way."
It was the most convoluted, ridiculous piece of logic I'd heard in a while. It was something I would have come up with.
"Maybe,"
said Sonia, still uncertain.
"You wouldn't break the promise," Sydney repeated. "And it would really, really help Lyssa."
I stepped forward. "It would help Mikhail, too." Sonia's mouth dropped open at the mention of her former lover.
"Mikhail? You know him?"
"He's my friend. He's Lyssa's friend, too." I almost said that if we found the missing Dragomir, we could then take Sonia to Mikhail. Recalling Dmitri's feelings of unworthiness, I decided to avoid that tactic just now. I didn't know how Sonia would react to a reunion with her beloved.
"And he wants to help Lyssa, but he can't. None of us can. We don't have enough information."
"Mikhail..."
Sonia looked down at her hands again, small tears running down her cheeks.
"You won't break your promise,"
Sydney was so compelling she could have been a spirit user.
Just lead us. It's what Mikhail and Lyssa would want. It's the right thing to do.
I don't know which argument convinced Sonia the most. It could have been the part about Mikhail, or it could have been the idea of doing the right thing. Maybe, like Dmitri, Sonia wanted redemption for her Strigoi crimes and saw this as a chance. Looking up, she swallowed and met my eyes.
I'll lead you there,
she whispered.
We're going on another road trip, Sydney declared. Get ready.
Dmitri and I were still standing right next to each other, the anger between us beginning to diffuse. Sydney looked proud and continued trying her best to soothe Sonia. Dmitri looked down at me with a small smile that shifted slightly when he seemed to become aware of just how close we were.